You're listening to Sipping on Some Crime podcast, hosted by Aaron. This podcast covers sensitive and triggering subjects, explicit language, and mature content which may not be suitable for children. As always, all parties are innocent until proven guilty.
Covering the case of Sheila Renee Finch. In October of 1989, Sheila Finch, 10 years old, rode her bike to the local corner grocery store to use the payphone. That would be the last time anyone spoke to or saw Sheila alive. Now, 34 years later, investigators might be closing in on the person responsible for Sheila's murder. In the fall of 1989, Sheila Renee Finch was 10 and had just moved back to her grandmother's home in Waco, Texas from Fort Worth, Texas. Sheila, who had brown hair, brown eyes, and a shy smile, had been living in Fort Worth with her father and stepmother. But Sheila wanted to be back in Waco, and she wanted to be with her grandmother. We don't know much about any of Sheila's family dynamics or what her life was before she went missing. Unfortunately, there just isn't much information out there that I can find. As I dug through newspaper archives, Facebook posts, and online articles, I could not find any mention of current family members advocating for Sheila's justice. But there are some great investigators that are. Unfortunately, this is another case where I don't have a lot of details about Sheila other than what's been reported. So we are going to begin with the day that Sheila vanished. October 17, 1989. When Sheila was settled back in at Grandma's, she had decided she wanted to re-enroll in her school she attended before leaving Waco. The Sol Ross Elementary School was located on 8th and Cleveland and was quite some distance from her grandmother's house, located on Ross Avenue. On Tuesday, October 17, 1989, Sheila would leave her grandmother's house around 8:30 a.m. wearing a long-sleeve red sweat suit top with red pants. Sheila planned to ride her pink and white bicycle to the corner grocery store about 3 blocks away to use the payphone to call her Aunt Trina. Sheila called to ask her Aunt Trina if she could pick her and Grandma up and take her to the elementary school so Sheila could be registered for the school year. The grocery store at the time sat on the corner of Dalton Avenue and South 26th Street, a little less than half a mile from Sheila's grandmother's house. When Sheila arrived at the grocery store, she walked to the payphone and called her aunt's number. But her aunt Trina wasn't the one that picked up the phone. Instead, her uncle did. Sheila's uncle told her to call back in a few minutes because her aunt Trina had just stepped out for a little bit. Sheila would wait at the grocery store for a while and then call back, and this time she was able to speak to her aunt, who agreed to come pick both Grandma and Sheila up at Grandma's house. Sheila's Aunt Trina would arrive at Grandma's house about 20 minutes after she spoke to Sheila on the phone, but to her surprise, Sheila wasn't there. Both Trina and Grandma were now concerned because there was plenty of time for Sheila to get back to her grandmother's house in that 20 minutes. Aunt Trina and Grandma were worried at this point, and they started looking for Sheila. They spent about 30 minutes looking for her in the neighborhood, and when they couldn't find her, they notified the Waco police, and they didn't hesitate to begin the search for Sheila right away. Within an hour of Sheila missing, not only was a search party put together with patrol officers from local police department, but also special operation units had an organized search team, and Waco police detectives were canvassing the neighborhood, and on top of all of that, concerned neighbors and friends jumped in and joined the search for Sheila, who seemed to have vanished. The Texas Department of Public Safety also brought in a helicopter to help aid the search from above. As helicopters and search groups spread out across South Waco near Grandma's house, neighbor after neighbor were being spoken to by investigators. Because of their fast response, lots of tips were collected by those living in the community. Sheila's neighbors told investigators everything they had noticed in that day in hopes it might help find her. Investigators had so many tips, everything from some people saw her riding her bike to other people thought they saw someone stopping and talking to Sheila on the sidewalk. Another person told officers that they saw a car stop and talk to Sheila, and every one of these leads were followed up to the very end, but nothing brought them closer to Sheila. Thursday, October 19th, just 2 days into the search, right before 3 p.m., the search for Sheila would end. It was a warm fall day, and a local brother and sister decided that they were going out fishing at Lake Waco when they stumbled across Sheila's lifeless body under some trees about 30 feet away from the nearest road. The children would run and get help from their parents, the police were notified, and investigators would be brought to the scene, as well as the Justice of Peace, Alan Mayfield. Mayfield would officially pronounce Sheila deceased at 4:45 p.m., and the cause of death would later be determined by autopsy at the Southwest Forensic Lab in Dallas. This was a horrible scene, and I won't spend much time detailing the scene, but I will put links to news articles if you're interested in taking a deeper dive. Sheila would be found fully clothed on scene and would have 18 stab wounds. Investigators will say that the scene was horrific, and that they do believe that Sheila's clothes were put back on after her murder due to the fact that none of the clothes had punctures or tears that would have lined up with the 18 wounds, just a few small tears in parts of the fabric. No family members were brought to the scene to identify Sheila. They were able to save her family from that scene. Instead, investigators were able to identify her through the clothes that she had been wearing the day she went missing, and from her photos that had been provided by her family at the beginning of the search. At the scene, Mayfield felt confident that they knew that Sheila's remains had been there some time, but was not able to offer an official time of death in that moment. Sheila's bike would be found 4 days later in a creek near the lake where Sheila's remains were found. The autopsy determined that Sheila's cause of death was due to multiple stab wounds all over her body. While Sheila's body had been found fully clothed, an autopsy was not able to determine whether Sheila had been sexually assaulted or not, and a rape kit was conducted, because at the time, it was standard procedure with any autopsy, especially with a female under specific circumstances. Again, there is a very detailed autopsy report, and I will provide those links in the show notes and on the Sipping on Some Crime site if you want to understand more about what they found and the injuries Sheila sustained. Investigators worked quickly and diligently to protect the scene where Sheila was found and collected as much evidence as they could to be saved and tested for later. Investigators even then understood future advancements in forensic science could help them, and they made sure to collect evidence that might be available for future testing. Despite investigators working this case with everything they had, days turned into weeks and weeks into months and months into years without answers as to what happened to Sheila that day. Who took her? Who did this to her? And why? That is still unanswered today. In 1992, Waco Police Department had arrested a man under the suspicion of Sheila's murder. However, investigators say that that arrest was made based solely on circumstantial evidence, and because of that, the man never saw a day in court and he was eventually let go. Presently, Detective Alliston, who has been assigned to Sheila's file, decided to look back in her case and see what was going on with it, because he knew, especially in this case, the key to solving it might be in the DNA. Alston said he specifically decided to revisit Sheila's case because of how far DNA testing had come. He also says that after 1992, when that arrest was made and charges were dropped, Sheila's case would just sit with no movement until he came along, and that didn't sit right with him. Alston told reporters at KCEN on October 20th, 2022, quote, "I looked at this case and knew that there were a lot of stuff there that could possibly contain some DNA evidence. which may lead us to a suspect, unquote. Reporters asked Alston about the rape kit and any possible DNA evidence being found there, and he said, due to the fact that it is an open investigation at this point, they won't be commenting on that. But they do say that they have plenty of evidence from the scene that they feel like they could test. Brent Watson, the section supervisor and technical leader at the DPS crime lab in Waco, believes that technology has advanced to the point where forensic scientists don't need, quote, high quality, unquote, samples as big as they did back in the day. Watson told reporters at KCEN, quote, you only need a stain. That's a fraction of a blood drop. And then to be even more sensitive, by just touching certain items or having contact with certain items, unquote. While Alston won't say exactly what is being tested, he will say that they do have lots of things to test, such as clothing, along with items that were found with and around Sheila's remains. None of Sheila's immediate family is still alive except for her mother. Investigators say that Sheila's mother is homeless and very difficult to contact. However, the investigators like Alston still remain hopeful that they can solve Sheila's case. Alston said they want to bring closure to the family and justice to Sheila, and he has a message for the public. Quote, if anybody knows anything about it, if they know who the killer is, if they had a conversation with the killer and they admitted to it, somebody talk to them about it, that they did it. I'd like to talk to them. If they know anything about it, I'd like to talk to you. Quote. KCEN News Station did a great job highlighting Sheila's case with a series called Gone Cold, where they spotlight a cold case in their area. It's why I know about this case and am able to shine a light on Sheila's story. I'll drop the links for those that are interested. I'm so happy that Sheila has an advocate like Detective Alston at her side fighting for her. And you can help be her voice and advocate just by sharing her story. DNA and forensic science are always evolving, and they are a great tool to rely on. But word of mouth and media pressure are excellent tools too. We use that tool by amplifying each case in our community through shares and conversations about these cases. If you have any information about Sheila Finch's murder, please contact the Waco Police Department at 254-750-7500. Detective Alston also provides an email that you can reach at mikea@wacotexas.gov. Of course, the phone number and that email will be in the show notes if you have a tip to submit. Thank you so much for listening to Sheila's story today, and please take a moment to share her story in any format and platform you prefer. If you're listening on Apple or Spotify, please hit that subscribe and leave a review because that does help other listeners find this show and get more of these cases to more ears. Don't forget, when you see those missing and murdered posts on social media, to hit like, share, and retweet. Every time we share a face, we get closer to solving a case. Until next time.